Dear colleagues, so after yesterday's wonderful dinner that your ambassador was kind enough to offer us, today you visit the Portuguese Parliament. I hope you, if you have the time, I don't know how is your agenda, if you have a few minutes after the meeting, I'd like to show you around a little bit this building of Parliament. We had the opportunity to change a few views already yesterday evening. I'd like to say on this occasion, since we have here now representatives of all the different, not all, but the most important parties, the Social Democrats and the Socialists, just to say a few words. We are going through a difficult period in Europe. You have your own challenges related to the decision the British people took of leaving the European Union, a decision that we have nothing except to respect entirely, and to express you our wishes that everything runs well for you. That's our deep wishes. We are very, we take very seriously our old friendship. I think being members of Parliament, you are certainly people very much, you know continental Europe very well. So I'm sure you had the opportunity to check that Portugal is really the European country that in many ways is the closest one to Britain. It's a country with lots of Anglophiles. Many Portuguese speak more or less English. We do our best, but in Latin countries it's not often very very common. You know, the older generation spoke French, but the younger speak English. Everybody is aware of our historical ties. And if you had the time to visit Lisbon and spend more time there, I'm sure you would recognize everywhere signs of your cultural influence in many things. And if you are a specialist in the Iberian Peninsula, you would certainly realize that Portugal is the part of the Iberian Peninsula by far closest culturally and historically to Britain. I'd like to tell you not to spend too much time, not to rob much too much of your time, that we expect that Brexit is successful. It's very important for us, not to say it is decisive for us that you are successful. Even further, I think, I don't think Britain leaving Union is, the Europe is good for Europe. I mean, it's certainly not good for Portugal. Imagine we are now in a European construction, an European project without Britain. So the center of is moving east, and Europe is becoming more and more a continental European construction turned to itself. It's not. And we are becoming more and more peripheral. Without Britain, we are more peripheral in this construction. We have been always a country open to the world, to the five continents, and open to the sea. Our history and your history run parallel and are always, and they touch each other. Every century there are important events that concern our two countries and our proximity and our alliance. The 17th century when we fought with us against the Spanish, and the 14th century when you fought with us against the Spanish, and the 19th century when we fought it with us against the French. And so there is not one single century where we didn't have something very important to unite us. So we just should be humble and realize that we are living just a little spot in history. And the important thing is that our proximity and friendship go on. And I think it's also it's good for Europe that the other European nations have the opportunity to realize that it is possible to live with outside the European Union. It's important for our German friends to see that Europe doesn't have to be an organization commanded by a central diktat of people who identify the common European interests with their own national interests, and that the others have always a choice, and there is the possibility of having a prosperous economic and political existence within the community of nations, but outside the European Union. So we are hopeful that things turn out well, and you have our assurances that the Portuguese will always favor a solution in the negotiations that favors Britain. That's the most important thing to say. I know that you are, you have always been, imagine a European Union without Britain or without Portugal. I mean, what do they know, for instance, about Africa? Europe was never a continental thing turning its back to the world. Without you, we are becoming a bit more provincial, or I don't know what's the world that best suits the situation, but we are turning our back to the world. I mean, what's Europe without the part of Europe that actually left Europe to make the rest of the world? But then, things being what they are, I just like to say that you should pay attention to the situation in Mozambique. It's really very complicated. They are not being able to fulfill their commitments, and they are now unable to make the payments, and their economical situation is deteriorating very fast. A few years more will be necessary for them to exceed the resources from natural gas, and meanwhile they are defaulting. So
are they doing that outside the European Union?
Incredible. There are rumors. There are rumors. Exactly. Yeah. For the last few years, we got the impression that kind of calamities could only occur within the Union. But there are rumors that there are countries outside the European Union, namely outside Europe. But anyway, dear friends, I just wanted to say these few words. I don't know if my colleagues would like to add to before I give you the floor, because if I was a really polite person, I should have began by giving you the floor, since you are the visitor, but I just lost my focus. Anyway, would you like to say a few words to our guests before they address us? Angela Guerra, she's a member of parliament elected by the Social Democrats. As you know, the Social Democrats here are the center-right party. it's a bit peculiar.
It's very nice to have you here. I would like to, in behalf of my party, tell you that we are here with pleasure to hear you, to talk with you, and I would like Sergio said, to give you the floor, and afterwards we would like to pose you some questions and to tell you something that is bothering us. So now, just to welcome and to give you the floor with the permission of Sergio, and afterwards we would like to say something more. Okay. Thank you.
Sergio, thank you very much, and thank you for taking time out of your very busy days to spend some time with us on what is the last day of this very short but worthwhile visit to Portugal. We've really enjoyed it. We've all been here before, but in fact I'm back in just 2 weeks' time for a couple of days with the Council of Europe. And you're right to stress the importance of the links between the United Kingdom and Portugal over centuries, and they'll continue. They were there before we joined the European Union, they were there during the European Union, and they will be there post the European Union. So we've got no problems as far as that's concerned. It's been crammed the last 2 days, and we've learnt a lot. But the one thing that has been striking is the friendship and the bonds that exist between your parliament and our parliament, your government and our government, and the fact that it's almost with trepidation we go to European countries, EU countries, and say, about Brexit, and you know, and some were dismissed, and you know, your people have taken the wrong decision, and you will suffer, and all that sort of stuff. We've not heard that. We've not heard that in Portugal. There is a respect for the democratic process. There's a respect for the fact that we've had a referendum. The people have voted the way that they have, and the government now led by Theresa May. She came in after David Cameron resigned, post the referendum result. She voted for Remain, but respects the decision and says that Brexit means Brexit, and that she aims to make a success of it. That doesn't mean that everything's over. We've got 2 years of negotiations once Article 50 is in vote. And even on this delegation, which constitutes members of the House of Commons and House of Lords and different political parties, we have different views. Two of us voted Brexit, four voted Remain. You know, it's we had a meeting with your Foreign Secretary of State, Teresa Ribeiro, today, I think she was amused more than anything else to listen to the different views that we had. We actually got a... She got away with it because we got very little from her because we forgot to ask her some pertinent questions. And then she just sat there listening to us giving different views about where we're coming from. But nonetheless, we got the distinct feeling of warmth and friendship during that meeting. So maybe without further ado, just because I know, Sergio, you know everybody here, but others may not, if we start with Helen, just to introduce ourselves.
Ready to talk. My name is Angela Guerra.
Well, remind us who you are.
Remind you, sir. Member of the Social Democratic Party. I'm a member of I'm the coordinator of the deputies in the Health Commission, and also here in Foreign Officer tonight.
Social Democratic Party.
Yes.
Okay, Carlos Gonçalves, Social Democratic Party and Vice Chairman of the Commission.
Sérgio Sousa Pinto, Socialist Party.
Hi, my name is Lara Martin from the Socialist Party.
Hi, I talked with most of you last night, but for those of you I didn't talk with, I'm Inês Domingos, Inês, it's easier, and I'm from the Social Democrat Party. I sit on the European Affairs Committee, and it's on that capacity that I'm here today, and also on the Finance and Budget Commission. I was elected in 2015, and my minister is right now speaking, the minister of... so I may have to leave a little bit early. But I very much wanted to be here to welcome you again. And if you, I may say a few words just before I leave and you start, we start our questions, because I have to go a little bit earlier. I just wanted to say on behalf of our party that we wish that this... that the situation, I mean, whatever happens in the negotiations with the UK leaving the EU, we as a party wish you every success. We hope that the relationship between both our countries are very important. We're particularly, we think it's particularly important that we maintain a good relationship regarding the Atlantic side of things. So we're very much hoping that we'll be able to continue collaborating on that front. And we are very happy that the ambassador, if I may say so, is so proactive maintaining this relationship alive. So thank you, Ambassador, as well for that. And welcome, and I hope you have a I suppose you will stay just in a, well, just until the end of the day. So I hope you have a fruitful afternoon. And I hear you're going to actually visit the building, the parliament, right? So it will be fun. And thank you. Thank you for coming.
I imagine you might have the impression that since everybody is either socialist or social democrat, that this is some kind of Scandinavian haven. It's not. our social democrats are right-wingers. Good people, but right-wingers.
Very good people.
Very good people, indeed. So, talking about right-wingers, you have the floor, Carlos.
Thanks. Excuse me, I'm speaking Portuguese. My English is very bad. I'm a Portuguese member of parliament, but I'm living in Paris. So it's not easy for me.
Duas pequenas notas
sobre as preocupações da importante comunidade portuguesa que vive no Reino Unido.
So two small notes about the concerns of the Portuguese community living in the UK.
Temos 300 mil portugueses a viver no Reino Unido.
We have 300,000 Portuguese living in the UK.
Que gostam de viver no Reino Unido.
Who love to live in the UK.
Mas há uma preocupação que tem a ver com as consequências do Brexit.
But there's one concern that is connected with the consequences of Brexit.
E os direitos associados à cidadania europeia.
And the rights associated with European citizenship.
É uma comunidade que está serena.
It's a community that is calm.
Mas está ligeiramente apreensiva.
But slightly concerned.
A segunda nota tem a ver com uma reunião que tivemos esta manhã aqui nesta comissão.
Second note is to do with a meeting we have had this morning here within this committee.
A comunicação social em Portugal tem dado muita visibilidade a casos de adoções de crianças que consideram forçadas.
Social communication in Portugal has given quite a high profile to cases of which they describe as forced adoption cases of children in the UK.
Não nos compete a nós, Parlamento Português, imiscuir-nos naquilo que são as decisões britânicas.
It is not up to the Portuguese Parliament to interfere in what are decisions of the British authorities.
A nós só nos compete pedir às nossas autoridades diplomáticas de acompanharem os assuntos.
We rely on the Portuguese consular authorities to monitor and accompany these cases.
Mas para mim, o principal problema é uma questão de informação.
But the key issue here is a question of information.
Capacidade de ter essa informação para se defender.
And capacity, the capability of these families to have the sufficient information to be able to defend themselves.
Eu digo isto porque é tema que tem sido regularmente divulgado na comunicação social.
And I mention this because this is one of the angles that has been regularly floated in the media in Portugal.
Pronto, eram as tuas duas notas. que queria dar.
So these are the two notes essentially that I wanted to raise here.
Desejo-lhe uma boa estadia.
I wish you have a
Eu já tive a oportunidade
good stay in Portugal.
Como sou membro da Assembleia Parlamentar do Conselho da Europa.
I'm a member of the Parliamentary Assembly of the Council of Europe, and in that capacity,
não só de visitar o vosso
parlamento. I have visited your parliament.
E apesar do meu mau inglês,
and despite my not very good English,
de ter uma excelente relação com os vossos parlamentares.
I have a very good relationship with your parliamentarians, with your colleagues within the Council of Europe.
Eu faço estas perguntas porque eu sou deputado pelos portugueses que residem
and
fora de Portugal.
I raise these issues because I'm the MP that represents the Portuguese communities outside Portugal. That's all.
Thank you very much, Carlos. Muito obrigado. Angela, faz favor.
I would like to speak in Portuguese. Um pouco no seguimento do que o meu colega Carlos Gonçalves acabou de dizer.
So, following what my colleague has just said.
E porque recebemos queixas de pessoas que nos fizeram chegar as suas preocupações aqui ao Parlamento.
And because we have received complaints of people who have raised their concerns with us here in Parliament.
Portugueses residentes em Inglaterra.
Portuguese resident in the UK.
Que nos fizeram ficar em estado de choque.
Who have shocked us, basically.
No seguimento de algumas reportagens que também passaram nas televisões públicas aqui em Portugal.
Following some reports in the Portuguese TV here in Portugal.
Pública e privada a televisão.
Public, state-owned and private sector television channels.
Que nos trouxeram relatos de mais de 60 casos.
That have reported allegedly over 60 cases of forced adoption.
A minha intervenção aqui.
So, my role here
é um pedido de alguma forma vos transmitir ou de vos pedir a vossa sensibilidade.
To ask that there be some sensitivity on your part
para esta questão.
Towards this issue.
Primeiro, temos plena noção de que é um assunto que diz respeito à vossa estrutura e a funcionamento interno dos vossos
First,
tribunais.
We are fully aware that this is a matter that relates to the internal functioning of your courts.
Mas eu sou mãe, tenho um filho de 5 anos.
I am a mother myself, I have a 5-year-old son.
E não consegui ultrapassar aquilo que eu ouvi e que vi de algumas mães.
And I can't forget what I have heard from some families and some mothers.
É mais difícil para mim perceber porque também sou advogada.
And it's more difficult for me to understand because I'm a lawyer myself.
E o nosso processo judicial em Portugal é bastante diferente do vosso.
And our judicial system in Portugal is quite different from yours.
Designadamente no que diz respeito ao ónus da prova.
Especially as concerns the onus of proof.
Daí não conseguirmos perceber.
So it's difficult for us to understand.
Alguns dos relatos que nos fazem, porque aqui funciona de forma diferente.
Because things work different in a different way here in Portugal.
Para nós é inconcebível que uma criança seja retirada aos pais sem uma sentença prévia do tribunal.
It's inconceivable that a child can be taken away from a family without a court sentence having been passed before.
Não que estejamos a pôr em causa que atuarem os serviços de imediato seja mau para as crianças.
Not that we question the fact that we think it's positive that the social services take action immediately when there's a concern, right?
Em Portugal isso funciona muito mal.
That doesn't work very well in Portugal.
E às vezes até os direitos das crianças são postos em causa pelos serviços sociais não atuarem tão rapidamente.
And sometimes the fact that the social service don't act that swiftly as they do in the UK, the rights of the children sometimes are jeopardized.
Nós não estamos bem.
So Portugal is not in a good position in this sector.
Mas aquilo que nos chega aos nossos olhos destas mães portuguesas a viverem em Inglaterra.
What we have heard about these cases of these families and these mothers living in the UK
deixou-nos muito preocupados.
Has left us very concerned.
Estou a pedir a vossa ajuda para acompanharem de perto estas
situações. I would like to ask you to monitor, to follow these cases with a particular attention.
Muito obrigada.
Thank you.
Muito obrigado. Angela, Lara, se faz favor.
Muito obrigada. I would like to welcome you all to our assembly, and I hope that your visit to Portugal gives you also time to visit and to see Lisbon. And as the president said, we respect your decision of leaving the European Union, and we hope that this process goes all well until the end. And for us, it's very important that our relationship and our goes on and comes more and more strong. So we hope everything goes well with the Brexit process, and welcome you again. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Lara. Please, next one.
Thanks very, very much for raising these two points. And you've done it powerfully and forcefully as well, but perhaps the ambassador can deal with the adoption issue, which ambassador is well aware of your concerns, and then you'll have different views as far. Well, actually, you may have similar views on the immigration issue that you've mentioned.
Sorry. And the first thing I would say is I've already spoken to some of your colleagues, and if any of you want to come in and talk to me again, I'd be very happy to do that. We've also been talking a lot to the Secretary of State for Portuguese Communities, and of course with your embassy and consulate in the UK. You mentioned social media media. Really, the main programme has been the TVI programme, which, and I am also a mother. It's always a tragedy when you see a family separated. However, I actually was very shocked by the programme because of the unbalanced and often inaccurate views it gave, not just about matters of opinion, but actually about matters of fact. And I think it's interesting that actually it hasn't been picked up very much by the media elsewhere, although we've had individual members of the public get in touch with us. We don't have any policy of forced adoption in the UK, but what we do have is a system of child protection that has as its first priority the protection and well-being of the child. And that will always remain central for us. The decisions are taken despite what the programme alleged. Decisions about the well-being of the child are taken by independent tribunals on the advice of local authorities. And the British legal system is one of the most respected in the world. Our law also states that very clearly that other solutions have to be considered before going down the route of adoption, including looking at possible carers within the family or friendships of the biological parents. The biological parents have right to free legal advice, exactly the same way as they would do in Portugal, and to free translation services. They're also supported by your consular services in the UK. And they have their rights to have their views put forward. So quite a lot of that was not what was presented in the TVI documentary. I would actually use the term documentary rather loosely on this occasion. But our system will always put the well-being of the child first, and I don't think we would make any apologies for that. But my understanding is that this is not an area where our group today have particular background knowledge or understanding. They will certainly have heard your concerns, and I'm sure will keep an eye on the issue as they go back. But if you would like to discuss in more detail, I would have great willingness to do that at a later date.
Thanks for that. Ambassador's absolutely right. First time we're hearing of it, so we will definitely follow that through. As far as the migration issues that you have mentioned, 300,000 plus Portuguese living in the United Kingdom, 50,000 Brits living in Portugal, for us that's very important. Theresa May, the Prime Minister, has made it absolutely clear that her intention is that this is going to remain, that nobody is going to be told to pack their bags and leave, and we hope that will be reciprocated throughout the whole of the European Union. I mean, this is no doubt one of the issues that over the 2 years post the invoking of Article 50 that is going to keep minds active. But I would think that on that one, it's quite simple, that... where there is community of interest, then I don't see there being a problem on that at all. We know that, you know, as I say, hundreds of thousands of Portuguese living and working in all levels of jobs within the UK, and they're doing a tremendous job. They're loved, they're made welcome. We have the odd story in newspapers which does anger all of us, where some people who clearly have of low intelligence come out with racist jibes, which I deplore completely. They're not representative of the vast majority of British people who take those from other countries, whether they're from within the EU or outside the EU, into the United Kingdom and make them very much part of our family. So can I give you just that assurance? I don't think anybody around this table believes anything different to that. As far as the future is concerned, this is all going to be part of the negotiations. We do know that Theresa May, the Prime Minister, is looking to control immigration into the United Kingdom. That doesn't mean no immigration. We lose 250,000 people ourselves every year who go and live, work in lovely places like Portugal and other areas around the world. And we expect that trend to continue. There's no reason why it shouldn't. Then controlling immigration into the UK above that 250,000 to about 100,000 is the figure that gets mentioned. So you're talking about a net figure of about 350,000. And there are all sorts of ways, the government's looking at them now, that this can be managed. So it's not going to be a free-for-all as far as immigration into the UK is concerned. But it will be a controlled migration into the UK. So, as I say, we will see how the negotiations go over the next 2 years as to how that is going to come about. Huge question marks over the whole thing. Nobody's... We're delighted what you had to say about the Brexit and how you want it to be a success for all of us. And that's where we stand from as well. But we're embarking upon something that nobody's ever done properly, and that is to have joined the EU as an independent country and to leave it as an independent country. And so this is uncharted territory. Anybody want to add anything to that? Helen?
I would say that there's a consensus in Parliament that EU citizens who live in Britain or British citizens who live in the other EU countries should be allowed to stay. I don't think there's a strong group of people in Parliament who don't think that. We do have a slight difficulty in Britain, of course, because we don't have ID cards. So we don't exactly know who is in Britain. So, but setting aside that, I suppose people have national insurance numbers, so we might use that as a proxy. But there is an administrative question about it. I think my main regret is that the government haven't made that a commitment already. And drawn a clear distinction between people in Britain now and future migrants, which I think would ease the concerns of the kind of people who you're representing.
If I can also add, the immigration is a very vexed question in this country, and it's an issue that is going to be problematic in our negotiations because of the four principles of the EU, free movement of labour being one of them. But I wanted to just build on what Nigel was saying about the numbers of people. One of the things that my party is hoping the government will do is to look at the definition of a migrant, because one of the most important and productive areas of relationship between ourselves and the EU is through education and universities and programmes which we all benefit from, like, for example, the Erasmus programme. So we are hoping that the government will look at the definition of immigrant, because to call a student an immigrant to us doesn't seem logical at all. Students come. If we are lucky, they may stay a little while, and our country will get the benefit of the knowledge that that they've managed to acquire. But fundamental, I think, to the future and the shared understanding between our countries is the fact that, you know, we do welcome students from all over the world. We don't want to restrict the number of students. It's good for the economy as much as anything else. But the most important thing, I think, is that relationship. The fact that people who come to, you know, English people who come to Portugal, Portuguese to England, and from all over the world, you learn so much about a culture, so that, you know, when you're a student, you develop that that feeling for that country, so that when you're at the top of the tree later on in life, then relationships, building the economy together, the knowledge economy, more perhaps than anything else, is absolutely vital. So that's why I hope that Mrs. May will accommodate the fact that students who come to our country shouldn't be included within those immigration figures, because my party thinks this idea of tens of thousands of net immigration is very counterproductive. But you will hear lots of arguments between us this afternoon, I dare say. We'll try and restrain ourselves, or I will anyway, and we'll see how we go with that.
Yeah, just to give you a little bit of background as to why there is and has been concern for a number of years about immigration, the numbers into the UK have been very large, and that's a function of the success of the United Kingdom as an economy, and labour market flexibility and business startups and all the very positive things. And obviously we've welcomed a lot of people. British people have not historically been against immigration, but against uncontrolled immigration. And clearly the Free Movement Directive is going to be a difficult bargaining point in the negotiations, because it seems to me that if it is an inviolate part of the four freedoms, that does set its face against the decision of the British people, which is to reduce immigration, not stop immigration, but to reduce it. And I think the problem is that when you had an expansion of the EU in 2004, unlike many countries, the UK did not put a moratorium in place. It didn't do a detailed study of its labour market and the strategy for people coming into the country. It didn't also look at the impact on welfare dependency of Indigenous people in the UK of potential labour market changes, such as cut in wages and conditions before the minimum wage, of this large-scale immigration. And that was a mistake, I think. And so we're catching up in a sense. But I can reassure you that we will probably have effectively what we used to have, which is a seasonal sector-based visa system, particularly in agriculture and horticulture. And there'll be many people from Portugal, not just coming to work in high-skilled jobs as pharmacists, doctors, engineers, but also will want to come to work in tourism and leisure and agriculture. And we certainly will not discriminate against Portuguese people. There will be a visa system, I imagine. And on that basis, immigration will continue. But it will continue on the basis of the needs of British people, of course, working with our European colleagues in terms of assistance on the flows of people. So it will be strange at the beginning, but I think it's in the long-term interest of all of us that we formalise and codify it in that way. Steve?
Bon dia. Can you? No, look, I think it's important to actually state this fact and get it out clear. In the day, many, many years ago, the immigration, the temporary immigration from the rest of Europe was perceived as filling the jobs that the Brits didn't want to do. It was picking the fruit, it was working on the farms, it was that. That is so out of date now. That is completely irrelevant to modern immigration flows. Nowadays, if you look at the Portuguese immigrants nowadays, they're the doctors, they're the scientists, they're the metallurgists, the people who work in the high-tech industries. There may be some who are baristas, by all means, but they're also probably students in the evening, or they're at medical school. And therefore, it is immigration to the United Kingdom is not a question of the United Kingdom doing the rest of Europe a favour. In many cases, it's the other way around. Our National Health Service would collapse within half an hour if it wasn't for many of the other countries who have kindly lent us their skilled professionals. So we're entering this bizarre relationship where, on the one hand, we're negotiating, but on the other hand, we're negotiating from the ultimate position of weakness. The United Kingdom is in a position of weakness. And what we can do and what we must do out of respect for your nation and for the respect of all the other countries that we have been so close to since full accession to the European Union is we have to say that we must protect the rights of those people within our country at the present time. Students is another issue. One of the problems with student visas is the conversion of the student visa into exceptional leave to remain and then to indefinite leave to remain. If you have a look at the majority of the student visas that I have in my constituency, they are people who have been studying for 14 or 15 or 16 years. And when you say, have you learnt anything in that time? They said, yes. I've learned how to get a job. I've learned how to get my wife over here. I've learned how to get children here. And I've learned how to apply for British citizenship. There are some people who are genuine students, but we have to separate that. And we have to cut through the mythology about this, particularly in relation to the people from Portugal and from the Mediterranean countries. But we need to actually say what we need as a country, and that will not stop. If you look at what Mrs. May said in India yesterday, this worries me profoundly. What she's saying is, at the moment, the country with the best visa regime anywhere in the world to enter the United Kingdom is China. Basically, if you're Chinese, in you come. There's no limit, no cap, none of this nonsense, and Laurel is absolutely right. To try to put an arbitrary cap on it is insane. And she's saying to the India, you can have a gold club card. You can come in. If you earn so much money, you can come in. That simply doesn't address the issue, and it will not differentiate the figures. So I think we need to start from the position that people move around Europe for different reasons, and the idea that there's a pool of unskilled labour that the United Kingdom is doing a favour for is completely old-fashioned, out of date, and I deeply, deeply regret it. And we're very grateful for the huge contribution that people from Portugal and the other countries have made to the United Kingdom, not picking fruit, but saving lives in our hospitals.
So as you can hear, we've got differing views on that issue, depending on whether people voted Remain or Leave. The important thing for us, and your ministers will be sitting around tables in Brussels when we will not be, and negotiating amongst themselves before they negotiate with us. I assume that that's how it's going to work. And clearly your interests will be different to some interests of other EU countries as far as those negotiations are concerned. And all I would ask is that you shout loud, you bang the table as hard as them to ensure that your interests are not damaged. I mean, none of us want tariffs put on port or coming in or kayaks or swimming costumes or motorcycles, whatever it happens to be. We don't want any of that, and we don't want it the other way around. We don't want visas for tourists to come into the UK or the other way around. So there's going to be lots of negotiations. But all I hope is that, and I'm sure it's the case, that your ministers will speak on behalf of the interests of the people of Portugal, as they always have done, and ensure that whatever Mr. Juncker is dreaming up, or indeed Angela Merkel, that it's in the interests of Portugal, as you know, our Prime Minister will be negotiating on behalf of the interests of the people of the United Kingdom. So there you are.
Thank you, Nigel. As you said, Brexit means Brexit. You are leaving.
Brexit.
Well, I don't know. Probably means Brexit. So you'll be leaving. You'll be leaving. You'll be leaving. And then we respect the decision.
We have no lessons to give to the British democracy. There is nothing to be done except to fully respect the decision the British people took. But of course, you are leaving, so things won't go on the same. I mean, I don't know how things will end up regarding the little freedom of movement and the financial services and the internal market. Things will change. We will never cooperate in any policy that aims to punish Britain for the democratic decision of leaving. That's our position, okay? Because we don't know the future. We don't know the future. The future is open for us as well. So that's why this issue is so important for you, but of considerable importance for us too. Ambassador, don't get us wrong about this thing of the children. We also we have reports that this very respectful preoccupation with children welfare in Britain reached such a scale that has also became business, and we are very worried about the situation. There is a thriving private sector which is helping children, providing children welfare, and unless in Britain there is an epidemic of mistreating children, of course there is reason for concern. I know that I don't follow these things that I agree should not even be considered documentaries. Are just sensationalistic things that should not be paid much attention. But I think the concerns have some justification, and in fact that situation is created some commotion in Portuguese public opinion, as my colleagues have just explained. But I'd like to tell you, dear friends and colleagues, that I'm a huge fan of parliamentary democracy, diplomacy. I think this is what we are doing is extremely important, because we do not represent governments, and this gives us a very special freedom. We speak with open heart and without arrière-pensée or anything else. So this is I don't know what's the British expression for arrière-pensée. I don't know. Anyway, second thoughts. Second thoughts. Something. I don't know. Whatever. So arrière-pensée. Eh? Deuxième pensée. Oh. So the thing is, I think it's really good to have this chance of, in a very frank way, to be able to exchange views on issues, because we represent the people, so we have this wonderful freedom to say what we think we should say, disregard of what the government might think it's the official policy. And your situation and ours is not that different, because you are separated from Europe by the Channel, and we are separated from Europe by Spain. It's much easier to cross the Channel than to cross Spain. So you have been always historically, you have been connected to the rest of the world by the sea, and with this little obstacle, which is not that little, which is the Spanish desert that goes from the Portuguese border to the Pyrenees. It's a barren thing that is a geographical obstacle. So it's very difficult to sail. No, very difficult to sail through Spanish territory. So we have to go by the sea, and that situation, we are not proper. I think the Portuguese people and the British people, we have this, I think geography made us as Atlantic peoples with many things in common. I don't know if you are aware that regarding the immigration, well, we are also worried with the drainage of qualified labor, because what we are exporting right now is qualified labor. So the Portuguese taxpayers are paying for Portuguese universities, some of which are quite good, namely medical and engineering, and our best professionals, as they finish their graduation, they leave. They go to Britain or to Switzerland or to Germany. That's where they are going right now. No, but the thing is, I had a conversation yesterday with the foreign minister of Romania, and she was saying exactly the same thing. Well, the best people we have are leaving because they are highly qualified. They get much better wages and salaries and career perspectives elsewhere, so they leave. And this is a problem in the European Union. So, and we are also very, very, very worried about that. If in Britain you create difficulties for these people, I'm not sure they are not going. They won't come back to Portugal. They'll just move to Germany. It's the nurses will go to Germany, the doctors will go to Switzerland, and they are certainly not coming back. So, with the same, they went to Britain and they will go elsewhere. I don't know if you are aware that the city of Lisbon was conquered to the Moors with the help of the British and the Scots. Did you know about this? This is very interesting because Lisbon was, you know, the Arabs, they have a urban civilization. Their cities were huge. And Lisbon was a huge city, very difficult to conquer, almost impossible. But then there was this fleet of British crusaders going to the Holy Land, and they stopped in Lisbon. And there was an arrangement was found between the Portuguese first king and the British, Scottish and English, actually. And together it was possible to conquer the enormous city of Lisbon, which you didn't know that.
Initially they failed, and then they came back 12 years later.
Yeah, but then they won, as you can see, because we are here. And the castle is called St. George. Yeah. That should mean something. You know that when we fought, that's true, when we fought the Moors, our war cry was for Santiago, St. James, Compostela, of course. But then we had to fight the Spanish as well. It was not practical, since everybody was screaming for Santiago. So we adopted St. George, and the Portuguese also fought for St. George. So the war cry was for St. George. So as you see, history is... History is everywhere, and that's very good that we have these things in mind. Do you know that if you want to read about the conquest of Lisbon, you should read a book which was written, the only thing written about someone who actually was here and fought here, was a British crusader, Osborne. So the letter from crusader Osborne is the most interesting description of the conquest of Lisbon. So. We talk about the alliance. It's so recent, the alliance. It only has 600 years. We are talking about events that took place 1,000 years ago. So, as you can see, our you know, the Portuguese sailors who discovered the world, they learned how to sail, making trade between Portugal and the British islands and the Flanders. So, I mean, it's a. I think if we maintain the ability to see history in the right perspective, we can see how irrelevant are many of the challenges. We should not make big fuss about them. The Portuguese, the British community in Portugal dates back from the 18th century. I don't think Mrs. Merkel will be able to change things dramatically. First they were in Oporto, now they show a preference to Algarve. But anyway, I mean, all these very ancient realities, I think they will endure. The Portuguese in Britain, the British in Portugal. So I'm optimistic. And we are not a very influential country in the European Union. There are no influential countries. The only one is influential, as you know. But but you can certainly count on us, and you can count on our friendship, because we take an historic perspective on things, and we don't get lost in the daily agenda, you know.
Yeah.
So.
It's quite interesting. Actually, I know the ambassador wants to come back in on the adoption issue, but when we joined the European Union in 1972, isn't it? Or 73? It's 1973, first of January. It changed our relationship with Australia, New Zealand, Canada, and a lot of other Commonwealth countries that we had a different trade relationship with then.
And with us, because we were in EFTA.
Exactly, yeah. So, I mean, the changes occurred then, and we are looking more at this stage, I guess, for my own view, global. I've always been a globalist, always been outward-looking, and as much global trade as we possibly can. I sit on the International Development Select Committee as well. As you know, the UK gives 0.7%, which is about £12 to £13 billion in international aid. And I've always seen in many respects international trade as better than international aid. In many cases, at least one can carry on with aid. You keep giving, giving, giving. But with trade, that's something that benefits everybody. Anyway, can I hand over to the ambassador?
Well, as an unelected pen pusher, I don't want to stand in the way of parliamentary diplomacy, but just I did want to pick you up quickly, Sergio, because, you know, I think that the role of private agencies in our system has been massively misrepresented. As in some other areas of our public services, there is a role for the private sector that is different from in Portugal, but contrary to how it has perhaps been presented, the role of the agencies is very, very limited, and it's only in certain areas. And what they do basically is identify potential fosterers and adoptive carers. They interview them, they do background checks, and they do some matching, and they check on the well-being of any child placed in their care. What they do not have is any role in looking at a family where a child is potentially at risk, in providing advice about whether that child should be removed, or in taking decisions about the most appropriate outcome for that child. So I think it's really important to understand that differently.
Does that role, the foster family, has that role?
No, the foster family's role is to receive and look after children, often children...
How could they?
Because the way it works is there is a child at risk. It's identified by the local authority as being at risk. An assessment will be made. The courts will then take a decision on the assessment. After that, there will be some decision made about where the child will be placed. So it's only later on in the process that the private agencies have a role, and I think that hasn't been made very clear. But once again, I don't want to derail this, and I would be very happy to talk to any of you later.
Thank you.
Sorry. I just wanted to raise a very different aspect of this, which is the scope and what you see as the likelihood and possibility and timescale of reforms and changes in Europe and the direction of Europe. Because when we leave, things won't stay still, they'll keep moving on. And I wondered whether you'd given any thought to that.
Well, we spend most of our time thinking about that issue because, as you know, Europe now is not in a balanced situation. I mean, we are pursuing policies which are certainly not in our best interest. And they are being dictated by a center that has been able to create a center of power which dictates through the European institutions policies, especially dictated through the mechanisms of the common currency. I mean, the common currency brought us to a situation in which we are not sharing sovereignty. We are actually losing sovereignty and being forced to pursue politics which are not in our best interest. Now, the Germans will have to take an historical decision. Either they are willing to think Europe in generous terms and not only on the perspective of their own self-interest, or I don't believe in the future of Europe. I don't know if I answered your question, because we cannot go on with a country with a 8% surplus, trade surplus against the others. This is not possible. Something is wrong. There are some deformations on the monetary policy of the European Union, of those who integrate the Eurozone, which is promoting these imbalances, and these imbalances are unsustainable. Angela said that, and the ambassador as well, that I'm a mother. Well, I'm not a mother, but I'm a father. When I think about my children, which are
10 years old and 8 years old, I think, these children will not spend the rest of their lives paying a debt of 130% GDP. It's simply not possible. Based on the fiction that the Germans are uber efficient and champions of capitalism, and we are just Mediterranean invalids, you know, and our destiny is to pay interest rates to the Germans. It's not possible. We don't accept this destiny. We have been here for 900 years. It would be very sad to end up in such a situation. So I don't know if this answers more or less your question.
Yes, but I've got a second question.
Okay.
Which is, do you think you've got enough of a coalition of other European countries to make the kind of changes that, to put the pressure on the Germans to make the changes which you would like to see?
No, I don't think this will happen with coalitions. I think things will develop very fast. Because if solutions are not found, radicals will reach power in different European countries. Because the voters are fed up with this thing of having democracies where people vote but governments can do nothing, because the program was written in Berlin. Okay, so this is unacceptable. And they will put communists and Trotskyists and fascists and whatever they find, and lunatics of all sorts, to replace mainstream politicians. Because they understand that the mainstream politicians are unable to move away from the German European orthodoxy. So if you want to stop this, we have to make political changes. And they will occur. They will occur. But everything depends on the Germans. We must create some form of compensation for the, how much, you know, you might think we export olive oil or something. No, we are exporting competitiveness to Germany. I told the German ambassador, we are very proud of your surplus because we contributed a lot for it. It's a common achievement. Wonderful surplus. Let's now. But I believe when we joined the market, everybody thought, oh, they are so competitive. They'll ruin our industry. And then they created structural funds. And the balance worked. But when we created the common currency, we believed it was a religious phenomenon. We believed that prosperity would spread and come out of the floor. It didn't. We created new imbalances because there were no mechanisms to stop flows of capital. And since the remuneration of capital was higher here, of course, the German money from the trade surplus comes to the south, where people pay higher interest rates to finance whatever they want to finance, either houses or factories or cars or whatever. And there are no legal ways of interfering with these flows, but it's much easier to adopt the moral approach that southern difficulties arise from southern problems, because they are those poor Catholics down there. Well, they are still, they live in those ages of, I don't know, they cannot be efficient and productive, and you know they don't work, they are lazy. They have 100 gardeners for a little garden of two flowers and a cactus. I mean, all these anecdotes about real economic problems of Europe, okay, are delaying our convergence towards similar standards of life. So either the Germans change or reality will follow its course. There is nothing, I don't see anything more than this.
Can I just say that you've just given my speech I've given on many occasions over the last 10 years in Parliament, and you're a socialist and I'm a conservative, which is strange that we're saying the same thing, because part of my, I mean, I opposed the single currency from the beginning. My party's policy was half-hearted acceptance of the inevitability of the single currency, and I said no. And then it was rule it out for one parliament, and I said no. But I still got elected to parliament. But the point being that, in my opinion, I agree with you. Too many of the young people of Southern Europe have been smashed on the altar of German monetary policy. And that is a controversial thing to say, but it's nevertheless true. When you look at 48% youth unemployment in Spain, 49% youth unemployment in Greece, and I guess the challenge, and Helen's absolutely right in challenging you, is, you know, how does that change? For people like me, we don't want to be in the club anymore that treats some of its members like that, but that's our decision, and it's arrogant for us to project onto you. But I suppose the challenge and the opportunity of Brexit is this is such a existential threat to the European Union in the long term, that it must surely make the German yeah, but it must make the Germans think it's not going right. Something must give here, and you're absolutely right, because you're going to get Trump in Europe if something doesn't give.
Viktor Orban.
Well, so I think we are making beautiful music together.
What if,
it's
for
a shame
the music,
we're going to be on the wrong end of the table.
I think the music would. I think the music would be even better if you realize that you have a very powerful institution called the Bank of England. And you will go through this bumpy road, but in the end things will balance again, and we will go on having a powerful institution called the Bank of England. And the Bank of England should consider the possibility of supporting currencies of other countries that need the transitional way out of the euro, because we know nothing about the future, and the future might surprise us. Well. Dear colleagues, now let's go for a little walk.